You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right.
Wait a minute. This is Vietnam music. I wasn't going to play that. All right. We'll try this do-over. Santana. Michelle Brand. A little bit lighter. I need to transition the program out of the dark place I took it. Tell me just what you want. 7:41 on the west coast of the United States of America. Joining me from the east coast, from the Tampa area, is John Ubaldi. John, what's going on? How are you today?
I'm doing great. Great day today. I mean, weather is kind of nice out here. It's not as humid as it's been, but it's nice. In the upper 80s, low 90s.
Well, it's been a week or so since we spoke to you last. Give us an update from Florida. How are things going?
Most of the things have been recovered. I mean, most of the damage to Florida has been in the Naples, Lehigh Acres area, and down around Fort Myers, which is on the western side of Florida, going down toward close to the Everglades, and Florida Keys that took a beating. I have a friend of mine who has a home there. His home lasted because it was built to withstand the winds from a hurricane. So there's a lot of damage there. So they got to wait for get the infrastructure up and running so they get cleared so they can get more and more, the people can get back to their homes and stuff.
So Florida as a whole, I mean, is your life still impacted?
They fixed a lot of stuff. The power's got on for almost everybody is back. The stores are probably took the biggest impact, meaning everybody cleaned it out prior to the hurricane. Then when their food went bad, they had to come back. So it took about a week for the stores to get their supplies back, considering all the supermarkets were needing all the same thing all at once.
Right, right. So now ops normal or pretty close to it?
Pretty close to operational normal. It's just you've got a lot of utility companies. They're still doing the repairs. You've got the cable companies doing what they need to do. But it's pretty much operationally back to normal.
Okay. And then again, obviously accepting the people that have big-time structural damage to their homes. Obviously, they won't be normal for a while.
Correct.
And it would appear, based on the headlines, Houston very much the same way, that they didn't get anything that exacerbated the situation they were in. They continue to recover. The biggest problem evidently they have is the governor and the mayor are disagreeing over who's going to pay for what and who has money to pay for what. And so that's been the biggest headline out of Houston in the last few days. So if we're arguing about money, then things must be okay. We're getting there.
Yeah, and that's the same thing here in Florida. Florida had for last year, I think it was like a $50 million surplus. Now with all the damages, it's going to be assessed how it's going to be paid, who's going to pay it, are they going to raise taxes, are the utility companies, when they're going to recoup their costs, are they going to go back to the utility commissions to get a rate increase? So these are things that are going to happen in the months ahead.
Got it. Which takes us to Puerto Rico. Much has been made here recently that the president didn't focus on Puerto Rico quick enough. I think criticism that's justified. Your thoughts on that? And he'll go down there next week. Puerto Rico, its own very interesting case, though, in terms of we talked about different states and municipalities before that are insolvent. Puerto Rico on the verge of being insolvent prior to this.
Yeah, they're correct. Puerto Rico is a commonwealth. They can't vote, I believe, in the U.S. election, but they're still considered American. And you're right, Trump probably could have, the president could have focused a little bit more on Puerto Rico, but they're facing about an $80 billion shortage in its budget, and there's only like about 3 or 4 million people in Puerto Rico because the last count, a lot of young people have fled because there's no jobs. It was total mismanagement from decades. That includes all phases of the Puerto Rican economy. And it's kind of akin to, I would say, like Illinois facing the same kind of problems. You give everybody the world, the payment comes due at some point.
So let's talk about that. How do you think this impacts? First of all, there's no way Puerto Rico can assume more debt. They were already on the verge of being insolvent. Do you think the United States crafts an aid package that largely absolves them of that debt, or somehow or other either spreads it out for a longer period of time so that they could assume additional debt? Any thoughts on how Puerto Rico will deal with this? Because clearly it's beyond their capacity.
Well, it is beyond their capacity, and that's a tough question to quantify, because in Congress the last few months, going even into the tail end of the Obama administration, and now we're in the Trump administration, there was no easy answer. I mean, a bailout someone were asking for is not in the cards, because if you bail out Puerto Rico, other states are going to look at that. So they have to do something and look at the creditors. They have to look at the bankers. Everybody's going to have to give up something. And Puerto Rico is really going to have to start to look and be forced to adhere to a better financing and fiscal discipline and do things differently. You can't give everybody the world and expect, oh, someone's going to bail you out. It's just, everyone's going to have to sacrifice something in this.
Interesting. They were, again, Puerto Rico's gone, you know, back and forth in this debate they've had about trying to get creditors to restructure debt so that they can continue to pay it, or would they default? And I want to say, what, maybe a year, maybe two ago, they went through, whether they would actually default on their debt. Their debt was, you know, relegated to junk bond status, the thought that Puerto Rico wouldn't be able to do that. For those of you who don't know Master Guns Ubaldi, he is the principal of the Ubaldi Reports. All you have to do is Google his name, UBALDI, Ubaldi, and you'll see a whole series of things that he's written come up. Before I start going through the news and asking you some questions, what's your latest column on? What are you writing about?
Well, the one I wrote about is on the NFL. The next one I wrote, it should be published by my editor today, regarding North Korea kind of threatened the United States with an EMP attack. This is where a nuclear device explodes up into the stratosphere or whatever it's called. And it would affect the electrical grid, because our electrical system throughout the United States is very antiquated. And we saw that in Hurricane Harvey in Texas, and we definitely saw that, and I saw it firsthand in Florida. And because we're so tied to our electronics, any disruption would have a major, major problem with our electrical grid. So that's the next one. That should be posted sometime this morning. So once I get that posted, I'll post it on my website.
All right. And so it's UbaldiReports.com, yes?
Correct. UbaldiReports.com. And you can go to Facebook as well and just type in Ubaldi Reports, and my articles that I've written and radio shows I've been on, including this one, are on there.
Nice. All Marine Radio. Crushing it.
We got it. Well,
somebody sent me an email the other day. They said, Mac, you know, I Googled something and about the Marine Corps, and All Marine Radio popped up everywhere. I said, yeah. I think it's over 1,000 episodes by now. I think it's easily over 1,000 episodes by now.
Definitely.
Yeah, just crushing the internet. Give me your so what was your article about the NFL about? Interesting stuff. You have Pat Tillman's widow asking the NFL not to politicize my husband's death. You have Chris, American Sniper, what's his last name?
Kyle.
Chris Kyle's wife wrote a letter to the NFL, talking about what it means, and to her, you had this. General Kelly, the chief of staff of the White House, talk about people ought to be able to stand up for three lousy minutes and think about the people that have been killed and maimed. so that you could become a millionaire. He didn't say that, but he insinuated that. The he's more articulate than that most of the time, except when he chooses not to be. So, give me as you wrote about the whole NFL thing. Give me your thoughts on that. And the other thing I want to talk about is, you know, no small event happened in Alabama, and that was this. The President of the United States backed a candidate who lost in a primary to a candidate that was backed by Steve Bannon. So very interesting, very interesting. Bannon backing him, saying this is the kind of guy that needs to come to Washington that will help President Trump's agenda. But President Trump is campaigning for somebody else. So I want to talk about what that all means. So the NFL. What'd you write? And I want to get to what is the solution for the NFL? How do they get out of this?
I'm not sure how the NFL gets out of it, except for what the crux of my article was. I started off and explained the situation, how we got to the point where we got, starting with Colin Kaepernick last season kneeling for the national anthem as he's protesting police brutality and the lack of economic or income inequality in many of the minority communities. But what I go into the article is, in June of this year, in your state, the Department of Education, and it was analyzed by a nonprofit group called Cal Matters that deals with strictly nonpartisan, to just hit the issues of California governance. And there was a report that came out stating that 75% of African-American boys can't read at grade level. So the point I made is
in California,
that they can't read at grade level. And at the same time, California has been fighting any kind of accountability, how the tens of billions of dollars of educational funding is managed and any kind of oversight on that. So the point of the article was, where was Colin Kaepernick and Stephon Curry of the Golden State Warriors? Why weren't they bringing their notoriety and the visibility of the media onto why not help African-American boys? And I said the same thing across the country. The same thing happened in New York, where Mayor de Blasio, as soon as he took office, wanted to get rid of charter schools. And a lot of minority children were benefiting from the quality education they get in charter schools. But you didn't see any athletes from New York stand up and support those parents. And then this was taken out by my editor. I wish he would have kept it in. That Chicago, the Chicago Unified School District, is virtually insolvent. I mean, they're basically bankrupt. And this affects many of the minority children. But the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, they had a teacher strike back in 2012, and his children were exempt because they went to private school.
Of course.
So the point, of course. But the point I'm making is, I got this. You have your issues with the national anthem. I got it. But with your notoriety, and this may be the out for the NFL, is let's get together and let's solve some of these problems. This isn't a Republican or Democratic issue. The only way to get ahead economically is to get an education. And my dad knew that firsthand. He was an immigrant. He only had a fifth grade education. And he said, if you want to get ahead, get an education. Whether you do it vocationally, like my one brother, or whether you go to college, but get an education. And if we would have came home with a bad report card, or a teacher would have said, your son's goofing off, that was a death sentence. Because he knew what a lack of an education did to his life, and he didn't want his kids going through that.
But your point is that we're okay with it. Because I'll just tell you, I found out here less than a year ago, nobody is held back anymore here in Southern California, at least in the Orange County School District. Nobody's held back. Everybody is moved ahead. So you may fail every course, but you will be moved ahead.
And that's the problem, is where is all these athletes? And then the fact that all these athletes play in cities that have been virtually party dominated by one party, not for 5 or 10 years. Some go back 80 years. Like the last time they had a different party run Milwaukee was 1906. The Cubs have already run a World Series, at least one prior to that. I mean, St. Louis, where they had some riots over a police shooting, they haven't seen a Republican or anybody else run that city since 1949. So why not shed the light and let's fix, where's all this money going? How is it being spent? What's the measure of performance or effectiveness? And it affects a lot of these minority children.
I don't know that that's what anybody wants to talk about, though.
What
people want to talk about is violence against. So I want you to give. I saw somebody get asked this question earlier today on the news. So how does the NFL get out of this? What does the NFL do?
Well, that could be the NFL partnering up with these players, but also partnering up with, and everyone wants to say this, is working with the president to say, how do we fix these problems? These problems aren't going away. And look at the economy. We came out of a deep recession, and almost always out of a deep recession, the economy just skyrocketed. The economy only grew 2.1%. And for African Americans, their income level is $5,000 on average less now than it was in 2009. So we need to address this in a bipartisan manner. Much like we said last week, we need to get back away from partisan politics and get back to bipartisanship.
Yeah, but again, I don't think it's ever been bipartisanship. I think it's I don't know how would we. How would we describe what we're talking about? It's not bipartisanship. It is partisanship in a joint way. Does that make sense? More? Because bipartisanship is kind of like this this term that says we're going to work together. Well, they don't ever really work together. They work in their own interest separately. And so does that make sense?
It does. It does. They do. Everyone's going to work in what's in their best interest. But if you go back to the last time there was a both parties could work together was really back to 1986 when Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill would work with.
But that's, again, that it's people. Not it's not bipartisan. It is partisan because bipartisan says we're going to solve this together. And that's not what they do. What they do is they solve it separately. But there's enough ground to stand on so that we can all stand there and say that we won. The Democrats can say that they won. The Republicans can say that they won and they can defend it to their constituents. We didn't go there with this bipartisan spirit that we're going to do this together. We went there as partisans and we crafted this thing that we could both support, which I don't think is bipartisanship. Maybe it's like, oh, Mac, you're playing ticky-tack, blah, 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 you know, and maybe I am. But, again, this notion, and people recoil at it, that there's bipartisan spirit in the country when most people would say there's not. It's not bipartisan. Well, and you know what, and I get it. I understand what they're saying, I think. And I think they have a valid point. Because we're talking about back in the good old days. Well, I don't know that there was the good old days. I think that they've always operated in their own interest, and that's the way it goes. So are we?
Well, they did. They do. I mean, you're going to go into negotiation like any negotiation. You're going to go into what's best for your party. You go in a partisan manner, but even then, they realize you're not going to get 100%. Of everything you wanted. It's just never going to happen. Even Ronald Reagan said, if I can get 60, even 80% what I wanted, hey, I consider that a victory. You're going to have to give up something. That was whole part of politics was the art of negotiation. You're going to have to give up something.
Yeah, but again, where it started, though, was in committee in crafting the legislation that both thought that they could support. Okay, and the give and take that goes on there. That's not the way we do it anymore. Now it's crafted behind closed doors by a small group of senators, in this case, on one side. And then what they do is they tailor it to maybe attract two or three other Democrats who they think are might come over because they're not going to be able to hold all the Republicans. What Democrat in his right mind would do that?
Well, but see, the other problem is, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, let's just take the health care law. I don't know if, was it Lynn Cassidy, Graham was going to be the best solution for the health. I don't know. But you won't get Democrats to cross over, and you won't get Republicans, if it was a Democratic-sponsored bill, to cross over. Okay, let's work and see if we can fix some of this stuff. You get some of the stuff, I get some of the stuff, and we kind of compromise on the other stuff. You're never going to have that. And this is what we talked about last week. It just seems like we're governing by partisanship, and you're not going to get the other side. Look how you treat the other side. Look what Senator Bernie Sanders said about health care. Oh, you're going to kill millions. We demonize the other side so bad. Why would you want to work with them?
Yeah,
why would you want to work with somebody who calls you a white supremacist or a racist? Why in the world would you work with someone like that? And well, that's where we've gotten to.
Well, come on. We don't really mean that, right? Right, white supremacist, that's just politics. At the end of the day, we're going to do business, yes, no, no?
At this point, it's a no. You go in there and the opposing sides can't even get together with the other opposing side for dinner or any kind of event. They won't even talk to each other. It's unheard of. I mean, it's like, you got to be kidding me.
I don't know if it's unheard of. There's something called normal order that we've moved away from. So, okay.
We did.
All right, so let me go back. Email. Mac, so the solution is what relative to the NFL? Let me frame it like this. Telling the athletes to shut up in color, okay, and the NFL has to assert itself, the owners of the NFL have to assert themselves that they need to stand up and respect the national anthem, is never going to happen, okay? If you don't give them an honorable way out of this, what you're going to have is you're going to have, whatever, a quarter of the NFL kneeling every Sunday, you know? And then there's also calls, hey, look, let's just stop playing the national anthem. Let's just not do that anymore. Which is interesting. It's pathetic. It's interesting, though, in terms of that we would entertain something like that so that we wouldn't have to deal with this.
But there's also a broader question here, and this goes back to the whole removal of Confederate monuments, is we're not taught the history. People don't know their own history in this country. I mean, we've studied the Civil War and the American history from our military studies, but most Americans really don't know the history of their own country. I mean, we're not a perfect country. But I've been all over the world just like you have. There is no far better country in the world than the United States.
They don't know that.
Because they're not, if you look
I know,
at the school,
but they don't look through our prison. If they look through our prison, they'd stand up. Right?
And well, the other problem is, but go to the schools. When I went to Sacramento State when I got my bachelor's in government, almost all the teachers I had in my government department were all on one side, and they routinely got up there and said how bad America is, and these people are the ones who are doing it. Now fast forward to today. Go to many of these colleges. Look what's going on at Berkeley. Whether you agree with the speaker or not, they have a right to speak. But we see these protests. We got to ban this. We got to ban that. This feeds into, and many of these people have never been outside the country and see what other people live like.
Yeah. Yeah, so how do we expect them to behave in a way that we would say, if they don't have that experience. Their experience and their view of this, the players, is I come from the inner city. I grew up, and you and I both know this, right? And one of the great experiences that you have as a middle-class white kid, in my case, an upper-middle-class white kid, is you go into the military and you meet all these people who grew up different than you. And you're sitting around waiting for trucks, or you're sitting around in the rain being miserable, and you're talking. And they start, and people start telling stories. Yeah, you know, hey, and somebody's telling stories like, yeah, where I came from, when you got lost and you were a little kid, your mom never told you to go find a cop. And so if you're like Cherry Boy from the middle class, you're like, what? Yeah, no, man, the cops are bad. They're on the take. The cops aren't on the take. But you see a different life experience. And I recall a conversation with my mom asking me did I think O.J. was going to be convicted. And I said, no. She's like, well, the evidence is overwhelming. I said, Mom, do you think a black jury in Los Angeles is going to convict O.J. Simpson based on DNA evidence? Do you honestly think that? She said, well, Michael, blah, 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 blah. I said, Mom, it ain't happening. And so now this is maybe a month before the verdict, right? So after the verdict, she calls me. She goes, you were right. And I said, Mom, when you live with people that have a different life experience and you listen to it on a regular basis, yeah, they don't look at the cops as the good guys. The cops are the bad guys. It's a different life experience. Yeah. And so when we say stand up for the national anthem, you know what they hear? Shut up and color, boy. That's what they hear. And you know what their response is? Fuck no. I ain't doing it. And so that's where the NFL is right now. It's like, no. So I don't. How does the NFL get out?
But see, that's the point. You are absolutely correct. Everybody has life experiences that are far different from each other. That's what I loved about the military, because you mold that dichotomy into working together. That said, this is a perfect opportunity. There was an African-American police chief in Dallas, and he said this after the five police officers were shot. And he goes, if you expect police, we can do 50%. We need to look at our tactics, procedures, how we're interacting in the inner city. But if you expect us to do everything, now is a great opportunity for the NFL, the players, the president, both sides. Let's come together and let's have an open-minded dialogue when it comes to race and some of the problems that are affecting the inner city. And go back to what I originally said at the beginning of this program. How many hundreds of billions flows into these communities that are not going into its intended target? How many minority kids go to the most despicable educational environment and nothing changes? That has to be an open dialogue as well. There was a superintendent of the Detroit Unified School District went in corruption charges. She's in a federal prison right now for taking money. That hurts minority children. So that's what we need to do, is an open dialogue. That's how the NFL gets out of it. Is okay, we understand your grievances. Let's use your notoriety for good.
Okay, so explain to me the way ahead for the NFL, though.
Well, that's where they got a partnership right now. Is okay, each of these players are in different cities. Let's do different nonprofits or whatever they need to do. Let's focus on bringing light to some of these issues that they're bringing up.
Okay. So
most of them are talking about the police issue. We got to look at that. But let's really look at that.
Okay. So what does this look like? So we have the owners on one side. We have the players on another. The owners are trying to take the player's side, but we all know when Budweiser picks up the phone, right, and says, hey, Roger, we need to have a conversation. Your ratings have plummeted at 33%. We would like the contract adjusted. We'd like a third of our money back. DirecTV. DirecTV right now is refunding the Sunday Ticket to people that want to refund it. When the sponsors begin to put the squeeze on revenue, then you'll see where the owners truly lie, and they will land on the side of their wallet.
Correct.
Okay. So we're all playing charades right now because nobody's wallet's getting pinched yet. So while we're playing charades, we have the NFL, we have the players, and we have these issues. You know, I can tell you what Colin Kaepernick's issue was. What is everybody else's issue? What is the issue today?
Well, his issue today is it's the national anthem, but his issue was always about police brutality, income inequality, and
okay,
the community.
But what is it now? What is the issue now? Is it the statues? Is it the president? What is the issue now? Do we know?
We don't know because it changes every week.
Okay. All right. So we have to sit down and we have to have a dialogue about the issues. And then what are we going to do? Now, you have on one side with the NFL, you have one of the biggest marketing machines in the nation and the power that their athletes possess in terms of focusing media coverage onto something. Okay, so we have those things that they can utilize. What do they do?
They'll just focus on what's in their best interest. Well, at least for the media, they're going to focus on what's going to drive ratings.
Okay.
And this drives ratings because everybody's talking about it.
Okay, so what we need is the NFL and the players to sit down and point their energies in a direction and maybe to join hands with the president because, I mean, if they reached out to him and said we want to do something constructive, I think he would be all about it. And once we have that together, then I think that the majority of us will stand because we're going to go do something good. But I don't hear anybody talking about that though.
No, all of the focus is on the national anthem, my right to free speech, my right to protest. That's all it is. No one's talking about, okay, what's the solution to your grievances? What are you going to do with your grievances? We have a good opportunity now. Because right now, I think today, the president's going to come out and at least unveil part of his tax reform. That's going to impact a lot of these cities. That's a way to get started. You know, one of their grievances was income inequality. Okay, how do we fix that? Is raising taxes the answer? Is cutting taxes? What's the answer to ending income inequality, at least curtailing it so everybody benefits?
Okay, but the issue is for them to define. So we have the players and the owners sit down and they point this in some direction, their dissatisfaction. Then they use the marquee power of the National Football League to focus attention there and to create either discussion or focus groups in different communities, create some kind of model. And then by animating their dissent in that way, then we can all stand and we can all be okay? Is that how it settled? Because as you and I both know, if you just say, okay, if it doesn't go down that road, I'll read you an email. Hey, Mac, I'll give you a scenario. More and more people turn off the NFL. I've seen pictures of the 49ers stadium that Thursday night. Look to be less than half full. The Coliseum, when the Rams play, looks to be about less than half full. I saw a picture, I'm not sure if it was Carolina or Jacksonville, where the stadium looked to be less than half full. The NFL's got a problem. And
what about the cities that, like when the Patriots played over the weekend?
Hold on. Well, the Patriots normally sell out. But let me just finish email. How about this? The NFL gets the wood laid to it by people that are sick of seeing this stuff. We don't turn on the NFL to have all the rest of this shit that we see 6 days a week shoved down our throats during a time that we're trying to escape. And no matter what anybody wants to say about it, that's what it is for the rest of us. It's escape. We pay our money to go have a good time. And now in the midst of that, we've got to deal with this. I, for one, didn't watch the NFL last weekend, and I'm not going to watch it in the future until they get this shit settled. I don't think it's too much. One more sentence. I don't think it's too much, as General Kelly said, to stand up and acknowledge that that flag represents everything from George Washington to Abraham Lincoln to Martin Luther King, John Kennedy, Richard Nixon, the Vietnam War, and the struggle of our imperfect democracy to be better. That's what the flag represents. It doesn't represent the white man. It represents our imperfect democracy attempting to be better.
But it, you know, the first part is the person who wrote that email was correct. People watch the NFL because they want to, they want to watch sports. It's just to get rid of their life. They just focus on football and forget their life. They're not trying to get political commentary. It's like when I go to ESPN, which I don't anymore, I don't want political commentary. I go to news channels for that. But this is what people are tired of. And go by what you said, we are an imperfect democracy. It's always evolving. Even if you go back through our history, the Lincoln-Douglas debate, Abraham Lincoln mentioned, you have the Declaration of Independence that said all men are created equal. Well, what does that mean, all men are created equal? He was saying that Thomas Jefferson made great words, but he was flawed. He didn't follow through with that. And that's what Lincoln pushed through with the Civil War. That's what people need to understand. But
yeah,
our country...
We might be a little bit adrift when we're talking about how the NFL settles this. But
that goes back to this last point, is we are an imperfect democracy. And every country in the world, at least we showcase our warts for all the world.
But they don't care about that. They don't know. They don't know that.
But see, the problem is, it goes back to they're not taught education. I remember my dad. He fought against America, but he came here. And he
these guys don't know that. For instance, as Marines, of guys who've been around the world and we fought, we've seen what. The way the rest of the world works, right? And so if you live in the United States, first of all, if you're a woman, you know, you should get up every day and kiss the ground, because in much of the world, you're not included. You don't go to the school. You sure as hell don't go to the football game. Okay?
No, you don't.
Right. You know your role, and you shut up and you color. You know, and on that note, hey, look, a huge step forward in Saudi Arabia. Women are going to be allowed to drive, right? Okay, that's
correct.
So when you think of but that's not. I mean, women hear that and they're like, "What are you talking about?" Yeah, that's the places we've been. So our prism is so different than other people's prism. Their prism is, right? This stuff's wrong, and I need to protest. I need to protest like Tommy Smith did and John Carlos did in Mexico City. I need to protest like Jackie Robinson protested. I need to protest like I heard Jesse Owens' name, and I don't remember Jesse Owens protesting in. And maybe I need to go read history, but we need to, you know, it's our right. So I unless the NFL somehow or other comes together to identify the causes their players feel strongly about, and then takes constructive steps towards addressing that, the players are going to continue to say it's our right to do whatever we want during the national anthem. The majority of the people that attend those games are going to feel offended. I mean, they were booing the Cowboys, yes?
They were booing the Cowboys and the Patriots
when they were kneeling down together. And so anyway. I agree with you. Unless they find some way jointly to one, identify their grievances, and then two, take action towards creating awareness and a mechanism that creates discussion with the hope of resolving them, then and this could have been done last year with you know, we talked about with Colin Kaepernick. Is, hey, you guys have the greatest marketing machine out there. Use it. Use it. Use some of that NFL money and bring together in some kind of summit, you know, law enforcement people, community activists, and let's come up with a list, you know, of things that we can work on and recommendations. It just seemed, because there's a lot of organizations that don't have recourse. The NFL isn't one of them. And what do activist organizations they look for? One, money, right? Two, the ability to have a platform that people are, and get in front of people and get their message in front of people.
Right.
The NFL doesn't have either one of those issues. Yet for some reason, they don't go near this stuff. And so I find it funny and a bit, and I think it's valid criticism. Wait a minute. You will fine players and you will discipline players if they do anything to their uniform. And the players in Dallas wanted to put something on their uniform after the five police officers were killed in Dallas a year ago. And the NFL said no. Okay? So you're draconian about the uniform. Right? It's about money. And so you don't allow them to mess with it. But the national anthem, yeah, that's hands off, man. That's, they do what they want. And so people aren't buying it. But again, yeah. The way forward though is going to be some kind of middle ground that you have to carve out with the players, because their life experience is so different.
It is, and that's what you said, is a lot of these organizations in every city across America where there's a football team are starving for resources, they're starving for notoriety and to get their message out of what they're trying. A lot of organizations do a lot of great things, and the NFL with all its money and all the owners' money could have helped out in all these communities. And I'm sure a lot of teams are doing certain things, but they could do more to help their community, or even influence the elected officials in each of these cities to do certain things to make their lives for minorities in these communities better. We just need a dialogue, because I never lived in the inner city. I don't know what life is like in the inner city. I grew out in the country. So my experience is different, but let's come together and let's fix some of these problems.
Okay, so we are, All Marine Radio is calling on the NFL, the NFL players, and the President of the United States to sit down and use some of that NFL money, that NFL marketing, and the bully pulpit of the presidency to focus on the social issue that the players are concerned about in exchange for respecting the flag that so many have fought and died for, so that they could create the opportunity for those guys to become millionaires. Is that too much to ask?
That is not too much to ask. Let's see where it goes. That's the way out for everybody. And it benefits these communities.
Problems.
And I would say the same.
Problem solvers. It's what we are.
That's it. We're a problem solver.
Well, no, we are. And the problem's got to be solved, addressing everybody's, you know, everybody's got to be accountable for it. Right, and I would tell you this. I think if somebody made the overture to the president, would you get on board to help us? Because this is what we want. Absolutely, I think the president would say, "Absolutely, I'll get on board with it." Let's include this.
At this point.
I would think. So, but I don't hear that. What I hear people talking about is they have the right, or they don't have the right, or the owners should tell them to knock it off. That is not going to work. That is not going to work. They have the right.
We're talking past each other.
They have the right. It's called civil disobedience. Long history of it in the country. Long history. I will say this. People get irritated when millionaires talk civil disobedience. It just rubs them the wrong way. That's what we got here. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk politics and leadership coming up next on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. John Ubaldi of the Ubaldi Reports, former Master Gunnery Sergeant, joins me. So again, just to be clear, All Marine Radio is calling on the National Football League, the players of the National Football League, to come together to craft a proposal using NFL money on raising awareness that will ultimately look to deal with the problems they're concerned about. We want them to then reach out to the President of the United States and get him on board with that initiative. And then we want them to market the hell out of it. We want them to hold it in major cities around the country. And we want them to fund exporting that to smaller communities. And therefore make a difference. That's the All Marine Radio position. Okay? Let it go out to every corner of the nation right now. Boom. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, I want to get away from this subject because it's giving me a headache. But let me read you an email. How about this? They've got a First Amendment right just like the rest of us. How about they do what they do, and the rest of us suck it up. If you don't like it, turn it off, and let's leave it at that. No fuss, no muss, no task force. The NFL goes on. At some point, it goes away.
That's what's going on right now. They're losing viewership, so we'll see how this projects.
So they lose viewership and life goes on. They'll lower their advertising rates. Salary caps will come down, and they can do whatever they want. Let me tell you, that's when it gets real, right? When the owners say, "Look, our advertising rates had to come down because of the loss of viewership, so the salary cap's got to come down, so people are going to take pay cuts." What? Yeah, can you imagine that discussion? What? Yeah, look, I mean, you guys exercise your rights. Our ratings are down 20%. Our revenue, you know, from advertising, we had to cut it proportionally. And so we have revenue down in stadium. We're not selling out anymore. And so you have a right to express yourself, but there's a cost to that.
There is.
I wonder what the reaction would be. Fuck that. Yeah, you're taking a pay cut. Congratulations. Welcome to the world of free speech, and that has consequences. So maybe that's, you know, if I were a betting man, I would bet that would be the solution.
We'll see how that progresses. This thing carries on. It's going to be up almost the whole season. We'll see if the revenues go down. And at some point, the teams are going to have to adjust. They got their bill because I think, I mean, don't quote me on this, but I think on most professional teams, half their revenues going out are the salary. It's a big percentage of their budget goes to player salaries. And if revenues are down, ticket sales are down, marketing materials are down, no one's buying their jersey. Someone's got to take effect on that one.
People are buying their jerseys. It will have an impact on them. So I would say that the way I look at it, obviously, I think most of my life I've been in leadership positions. When you're in a leadership position, you look for a solution to this kind of stuff. But evidently that's not apparent to the people that own teams in the NFL. That's not how they look at it. If they're not able to come to some, and here's the problem, and I'll read you, here's another email. Mac, I enjoy your show. I will tell you this, I am mixed race, and one of the races I have in me is black. The players will consider any attempt to tell them not to do this as selling out to the white man. And when it's framed like that, they will never do it. Because you'll be called a sellout. And they won't do it. I'm not sure where this all goes. The biggest problem's going to be the president doesn't go away with this stuff. He will burn it down. And so the NFL's problem isn't going away. The president just doesn't shut up. Whenever he's challenged, he doubles, then he triples down on that stuff. So good luck to the NFL trying to get out of this one, because you're between two rocks. One is the president of the United States, who feels like he's standing up for the middle class of America, who hates this, who thinks that standing up for the national anthem is simply an American tradition, and not to do so is an insult to the military, first responders, and people that have been buried under that flag. On the other side, you have a lot of black inner city young men that feel very strongly about injustice. When they see the flag, they don't see what middle class America sees. And for them to be told to stand up and don't say anything will be akin to selling out your race. I'm not sure how it gets settled. But I know the president, whenever this stuff happens, he gets the blowtorch out. He doesn't give it up. So good luck to the NFL. They'll need it. Okay.
Well, Jake's a good point. I mean, it's not an easy solution. I see his point, but it could be when revenues start to come down, adjustments have to be made.
but that tends not to, that's difficult, you know. So we'll see. All right, the first female infantry officer graduated from the infantry officer course last week. She asked that her name and her photograph not be released to the media. She has declined all requests for interviews. Just for the record, All Marine Radio hasn't tried yet. So if she ever is going to do an interview, like, why would it not be on All Marine Radio? Good question.
Why not?
Good question. The give me your thoughts on that, Master Guns. Is it the best case scenario for the Marine Corps because no standards were lowered, which shows that, you know, she's going to be a unique woman, but women can get through the course. Is it a bad day for the Marine Corps because a woman did get through? Your thoughts as a former 0311.
It's, I said this before, maybe not on this program. I knew eventually a woman would get through the infantry officer course.
Right.
That was going to happen. A woman would get through. It's not getting through the course. It's the longevity you have in the infantry field. Now, if she graduated from the infantry officer's course, she's probably what, about 24, 25 years old, somewhere in that range?
But I'd say probably somewhere between 23 and 25.
Okay, well, let's just go with the highest. Let's say she's 25.
Okay.
She goes to a platoon. She's now a platoon commander.
Okay.
And I know I'll probably get heat for this one, but if she's a platoon commander at age 25, does she intend to have a family? If she gets married, we've said this on the show before, when a male officer... He's married, his wife is now going to have a child. He doesn't get off the deployment cycle. She would have to. So let's say they're getting ready for deployment. 3 months out, she says, I'm going to let you know I'm pregnant. I'm going to have a family. Well, she can't deploy. Now they got to find somebody else to replace her. That upsets that whole unique cohesion.
Okay, let's do this. Let's just say that she has a child. In one scenario, let's just say she doesn't want to have kids. Okay. So if she doesn't want to have kids, you know, she goes and does a B billet and then she goes back to the fleet. Yes.
She would do the same standard thing that all military and Marine Corps infantry officers go through. You become a platoon commander for a while, then you go into a B billet. You come back. Maybe you're the XO of a company. then you become a company commander, then you go back to the staff position in a battalion before you come back to your battalion as the operations officer or systems officer before you become the XO and move up to battalion commander level. It's just the longevity. It's very tough in the infantry. Even for males, it's tough.
Right. Okay. So she has a child. Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, she has it while she's in her B billet, and now she's going to come back and she's going to be a rifle company commander.
Then she would have to face. She would have to have a deployment plan for her child.
She's married. Her husband's going to take care of the kid.
Well, okay. Then she, if she's fine with that, then she can do the deployment cycle. But let's say she's not because of. From the enlisted side,
she's
I don't
gonna,
know what
that's on her. She's got to figure that out. I mean, it's not on the Marine Corps. Not on the Marine Corps.
No, it's not on the Marine Corps. It's all on her.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So overall, is it a good thing that somebody got through the course and now the course doesn't need to be modified? Is that what that says? Or should we still look at the course because one isn't enough? Where does this go?
I just think we always not say because a woman got through the course. I think we're always looking to better the infantry officer's course, just like when General Meller altered and modified to make it tougher on the PFT and the CFT, not trying to pin women, but he said look across the total force, how to make the total force better. So I think there's always should be an evaluation how a course is being done and who graduates and who doesn't graduate. Was the quality of the applicants any different from any other time? That I don't know, have to see how that works.
Okay. So, you know, let me just tell you, we were talking about this a little bit the other day. Institutionally, you know, I have friends that say that this is wrong and the commandant of the Marine Corps should say it's wrong. Well, General Dunford was the commandant when we got told to do this. He asked the Secretary of the Navy if the Marine Corps could conduct or directed the Marine Corps to conduct a study, the ground combat integration study. What the study found was that the females in the program performed at or below the lowest 5% of the males in the study. Okay. The Secretary of the Navy lambasted the report before it was even published. He then got wirebrushed for that by John McCain in an open hearing. However, none of it made any difference, right? At the end of the day, the Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, told the entire Department of Defense that they would open up all military occupational specialties to women. So we can talk about, and I have a friend, Will Cosentini, who called in and said, this is a moral issue. If your definition of combat is what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, then by all means, women can do it. If you look at Vietnam, if you look at the Chosin Reservoir, if you look at Korea, if that is your definition of combat, if the island hopping campaigns of World War II are your definition of combat, then I think you would be wise to exclude them. So his point is the way you define it gives you your answer. Now, General Barrow said that there's no women can't do it. What was done in Vietnam, in the Central Highlands and whatnot, he said women can't do it. So, is this the optimum? So again, commandant can take a moral stance, and then that commandant Ubaldi gets replaced by Commandant McNamara. Commandant McNamara then looks and says, "I agree with Commandant Ubaldi," and they said, "Oh, we didn't know that. You can get leave, too." Now Commandant Smith shows up, and they say, "Commandant Smith, your thoughts." And he says, "Oh, I agree with the president. It's open." So at some point, there was going to be a commandant who acquiesced to the wishes of the civilian leadership of the nation, yes?
Correct. Okay. I think the bigger issue, the reason why this is being pushed, you mentioned Chosin, the island-hopping campaigns, World War II, and the Central Highlands of Vietnam.
Right.
You still had a majority of the country who served in the military in the combat roles in those wars. Today, we are so far removed where anybody has any connection to the military. So they're looking at it from an equality standpoint.
Right.
We're looking at it from combat because we served in combat. That's the big argument. Those who are supporting it, they're not realizing what they're instituting.
Breaking.
They're really not.
Hold on. A little piece of breaking news. Yesterday there was a story about the Department of Justice, I believe, filed charges against several NCAA assistant basketball coaches, as well as I want to say several employees from Adidas in what they called, I believe they call it racketeering. Anyway, I'm not sure exactly what they hung on it. Anyway, breaking news right now, the University of Louisville has just fired Rick Pitino, who is the head coach of that program, and he's been in trouble before with prostitutes and an assistant coach. So he and a guy named Tom Jurich have both lost their jobs at Louisville. So interesting stuff going on in the world of big money athletics. This unholy alliance between young athletes that are bound for the NBA, shoe distributors that pay money, and assistant coaches that facilitate much of this. So interesting stuff. Anyway, back to the Marine Corps and a woman. Is this, you know, my own opinion is, I mean, given that we answer to our civilian masters, and they don't have military experience. They see this as equal opportunity. That if you're a woman and you can meet the standard, then you ought to be able to be allowed to do the job. And I think in the United States of America, I don't know how you have another position. If you can meet the standard. If you could, and so to me, the bad outcome for the Marine Corps would have been if no woman ever met the standard, then the standard is going to be lowered because it's.
But I think the other point is there was a panelist in Washington. They had a different, you know, males and females. They had one sergeant. She was female, and she was against women in combat. And the argument she kept saying was, listen, all women are not going to be 19 years old forever, right, or they're going to be 24 years. We age. Men tend to last longer as they get older.
Right.
And they're not looking at that. I mean, there's going to be somebody that's going to get through. Now that's from at least the one that goes through infantry. You have a choice. But as the, what about the enlisted? When I went open contract, I wasn't given a choice to go infantry. They said the Marine Corps wants your infantry, you're going infantry. But females, they get to do everything beyond infantry. So how are they going to do that? They're going to say, if you want a choice, you get to go infantry. But if you don't, we'll send you somewhere else.
Yeah, that's not really fair. It's like, well, we'll play when we want to, but when we don't want to play, we don't want to play.
Exactly. Right? I even had one female Marine, she was a FET Marine, and I asked her this question. She goes, oh, what part of hell no don't you get? It just doesn't work.
I know, but again, here's the other side of it, and I've been told this by, I think her name was Lieutenant Colonel Austin Rollins, and that is this. Hey, that's my decision to make. If I want to do it and I want to subject myself to that, that's my decision to make. I don't need you to be big brother for me. Mind your own business. The standard should be the standard. If I can meet the standard, I ought to be given the opportunity, and I'll worry about me. You don't need to worry about me, okay? That's right. That was her attitude.
You know, but I would say to her is, okay, so that means all females who turn 18 years of age have to sign up for selective service just like their male counterpart.
Yes.
Before they get any financial. So, are you going to go that one? If there's a draft,
well, she would say yes. But we all know how that plays out on Cap. We all know how that plays out on Capitol Hill, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so let me just tell you how this plays out on Capitol Hill. Women in combat. All right. So we're sitting in our staff meeting. I look over at you, Baldy. I'm the senator. I look at you, Baldy. No, I'll be a congressman. All right. I've got to get reelected every 2 years. I look at you, Baldy, and I say, hey, John, how's women in combat polling in the district? And he looked back at me and he says, nobody really cares. He said, but among women, they're like 90 to 10 that they ought to be allowed the opportunity. Okay. All right. So I'm voting for that because nobody cares. And I don't really care. I never served, you know, so I don't have an opinion one way or the other. But if women are in my district are 90 to 10 for this opportunity.
Women going to combat.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. All right, Senator, here's the next one that's going to come up, or Congressman, here's the next one that's going to come up. This Ubaldi, he's head of my research. The next one that's going to come with this is selective service. That if women can participate in combat, then they ought to have to register for the draft. Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Everybody in the staff meeting nods their head, yeah. Okay. So, John, how's that polling? That's polling 90-10 also. Oh, really? In favor? No, Mr. Congressman. Oppose. Women do not want any part of the draft. Well, wait a minute. You can't have it both ways. Yes, we can. All we have to do is pass some kind of exclusion for women on selective service or defeat it when it comes up. And it's not just running 90-10 in our district. It's across the board, 90-10. Women are overwhelmingly against this. Okay, so they want the opportunity. They don't want the obligation. Yes. All right, got it. That's where we're going to stand, okay? I'm for the opportunity in terms of they're being allowed to be included in combat, but I'm against them us applying that logically and saying that all women should register for selective service. We're not going there. Got it, Mr. Congressman. All right. Anybody else? Any other issue I got to deal with? So, right, that's how the contradiction exists. And so, if you want to apply logic to it, we're talking politics. Makes no sense. You don't need to do it. So that's the way it is. So now I go back to my question: was this the optimum result for the Marine Corps in that, as opposed to having to look to lower the standard because a woman can't get through there, a woman did get through there? So the standard is validated because she can get through. It's not going to be just any woman. She's going to be exceptional because the standard is high. So the question to you is, was this the optimal outcome for the Marine Corps?
It's going to be a dubious outcome because it muddles the water, and then you're looking at the officer side, but now what about the enlisted side?
They have to sign up. They have to go contract and sign up for MOS. And from what I've read in the Marine Corps Times, 50% of those who sign up for combat arms contracts can't meet the minimum physical requirements to go to that training upon their completion of boot camp. So that's where that sits. So that's and we're going to be okay with that. There is going to be a double standard relative to female enlistment. You can opt into the combat arms. If you're a male, you're in the pool, bro. Whether you like it or not. And until some male challenges that legally, this separate but equal thing, then it exists. The same caveat is you and I are both sergeants. You have to do 7 pull-ups to get 100%. I've got to do 22. Right? I do 18. You do 7. You get promoted in front of me. And I say, wait a minute. We both do the same job. The North Koreans, they don't understand gender norm PFT.
Really?
All they understand is, can we do our job? And it's not fair to me that she's allowed a different physical standard in the same job.
But where it's going to change, it may not change on the political realm, is we all know there's combat coming. Whoever we're facing, if America's been in combat since the day this republic was founded, that's what's going to happen. We haven't seen women killed to that degree. Now, there were women killed in Iraq, and I believe there was a bunch of women killed outside of Fallujah.
No, it was in Fallujah.
Yeah.
On a suicide vehicle ID hit a six by that happened to be transporting women, women, female Marines, and I want to say
19 got killed.
I don't know if it was that many, but
there was a lot killed.
Yeah.
So that's when it starts to hit home, when women are killed to that degree, when they start seeing women bodies come back.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, get used to it then. This is already, the die is already cast. What are we going to cringe as a nation because these women made a decision and now they're dead? You know, sorry.
Well, that ship has sailed. Well, the whole ship has sailed now. Women are going to be in combat. Whether we like it or not, whether we can debate it or not, the die is cast.
All right, let's
just to see how this plays out.
Okay, I'll read you another email. Interesting discussion about women in combat. Here's my take. My take is that infantry units and any combat arms unit will do what we've always done, which is if they're non-hackers, what do we do with non-hacker males? If they're officers, they go to the S3 shop, and they become S3 Bravo, S3 Charlie, S3 Zulu. They become staff guys. If they're weak enlisted Marines, what do they become? They're A drivers.
Or guard duty somewhere.
They're doing something where they're not going to get in the way. I believe that at the pointy end of the spear, they will figure it out like they always do. What we tend not to do as an organization is we tend not to put those people in positions where they can get other people killed. Period. And it doesn't matter their gender. We do that with men all the time. Whether you're weak or stupid, we find a place for you. It's normally out of the way. And so it will go. If they're competent, they'll get good jobs, and the units will be happy to have them. So if you have a woman who winds up being a baller, guess what? She'll get put in a baller position. So I personally think this will all be figured out. I don't believe the numbers will ever be very large.
I would agree with that.
Because the jobs aren't easy, and they're physically demanding. And for a woman to do it once is one thing. For a woman to keep herself physically like that is a long time. And all it will take is to fail one time and be physically humiliated on a hump, on a PFT, or some other physical event. Because we know if you can't hang, you're ostracized. And a big part of that is the physical part of it. I cannot imagine, as an officer, that a female would fail or do poorly in front of all those other males with everybody watching. It's incredible pressure. I wish them all the best of luck. If they're good, it won't be an issue. If they're marginal, then I don't care if they're enlisted, machine gunners, mortarmen, grunts, they'll be given some kind of duty with the CO's PSD. Somebody will be supervising them closely. They'll be an A driver. They'll go to the 3 shop. They'll go to the 4 shop. They'll go to the comm shop. They will find a place for them. The Marine Corps will adjust. Interesting email.
No, it's a very interesting email.
Because that's the way it goes, right? That's the way it goes.
You've been a
platoon sergeant. You look at one of your Marines who's a knucklehead. What do?
You try to get rid of them, right? You know, adjust his attitude or you get rid of them.
Right? You put him in a squad that you have a really good squad leader and say, hey, look, man, you got to take care of this. You got to take care of this bozo. And then when it gets so bad, then what do? You look to move him out of the platoon up to the company office.
You fap him out to guard duty on the base. Fap him out somewhere.
Right. Or he's going to be the company clerk.
Correct.
And that's how you do it with guys. And so, you know, the women will just be thrown into that mix you know, and they'll be dealt with accordingly. If they can hang and do their job, not an issue. Right? But if they're subpar performers, then somebody will find a place for them. All right. I've got to take a break. I want to get your comments on a political question. John Ubaldi, okay. my guest this morning, as we kind of go around the wheel, covering the National Football League, covering the first woman infantry officer. And by the way, I think Master Guns and I, we wish her nothing but the best. That is not an easy course. That is a ball buster. That is a ball buster of a course, okay? And so when you can get through that, you know, have at it. You know, I hope people respect her in terms of the media. And I think she has nothing but driven her own stock up by not allowing her identity and picture to be put out there nationally in kind of this dig me moment. I think she's impressed a lot of people, you know, by rejecting all of that and saying that, hey, look, I just want to do my job. And so,
and I respect her for that, not putting her picture and try to get the notoriety. She just wants to do her job as a Marine Corps infantry officer.
Yeah, she can do. Hey, and as her agent, she can do that later. Okay, we don't need to do it.
There
now.
You go.
We can do it later when we write the book. All right. So look, right away, she's already smarter than the rest of us. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of. Senatorial politics. More of All Marine Radio coming up on a Wednesday right here on your home fort, and that is the All Warrior Radio Network. You looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. And I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Seven minutes after nine. Master Gunjubaldi here for a few more minutes. Read you another email. I agree with the moral part of it. I think it's just wrong. And I wish the commandant would have just said no. However, since that didn't happen, I don't think this is a bad outcome. She seems to be handling this well. I hope the unit that she goes to is ready for her. I hope the Marines treat her with respect and give her a chance, like they give all leaders that come. Sergeants, staff sergeants, lieutenants. But the bottom line in that world is, if you can't cut it, it gets pretty awkward pretty fast. No matter what your rank. It's one of the toughest environments I've ever seen. Because you can't hide. Especially as a platoon commander. You navigate it. You direct it. You counsel. You break bad news to people. You do this all the time. And if you're not up to it, then you're not up to it. So I wish her all the best of luck. If she's not up to it, it's going to be a tough job for her. She'll face a lot of scrutiny, much more than anybody else will, as will any NCO that's female that goes into that job. We shall see. This is an interesting experiment in a place that many of us think you shouldn't be experimenting. But as Max said, at the end of the day, we answer to our civilian masters. I'm curious on your thoughts on General Dunford's statements about transgenders. We'll talk about that now, as a matter of fact. So a little bit of a segue into it. In the early bird today, the number four story is, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I don't know what forum. Let's see. Quote, "I believe that any individual who meets the physical and mental standards should be afforded the opportunity to continue to serve," Dunford told members of the Senate Armed Service Committee during his reappointment hearing on Tuesday. We might have to tee that up here in a few minutes. He added that he previously had given that advice to the administration in private in the past and told senators he would continue to give that advice if lawmakers allow him to continue in his leadership post for two more years. I think that's a safe bet that General Dunford is going to get reappointed. In July, President Trump announced via Twitter that he would not allow new transgender recruits to join the military and would review whether currently serving transgender troops should be booted from the service. At the time, Trump said he had made the decision after consultation with my generals and military experts, but that apparently did not include Dunford, who has been a top military officer for the entirety of Trump's presidency. He told lawmakers he believes that transgender troops have served honorably since last year when Defense Department officials announced new rules that allowed them to serve openly. He said that he had not yet met with any transgender troops in recent months to discuss the challenges facing them, but said he would be open to the idea. So, anyway, earlier in the month, the Secretary of Defense said he would have a study completed that should be completed in early 2018. President Trump issued a presidential memo, formally maintaining a ban on any new transgender recruits and halting the use of military funds for sex reassignment surgery. Okay. And so that's where we sit. That's where we sit today. Master Guns, you got any thoughts on that?
Either way, it's going by what you said. Civilian masters are going to make that determination. We've gotten to this. It's the same thing with women in combat. You can make your opinion. I'm sure General Dunford, just like General Mattis, when he was at his confirmation hearing, said, hey, if anybody can do the job, I could care less what goes on in the bedroom. I'm more concerned what goes on the battlefield. But that said, the reports, just like what showed with women in combat, whatever the reports show, it doesn't matter. It's whatever Congress decides they want to do. That's what they're going to do. They don't seem to listen to those who have the direct experience in combat. They're going to look at the segment which you read, you know, a little while ago about what my constituents want me to do. So I see transgender serving openly in the military.
Serving openly. Okay. Yeah. Let me just read you another little piece of this. The RAND Corporation had previously estimated the cost of health services for transgender troops at close to $8 million. Now, I don't know where that's kind of a, okay, what's it relative to? What would it be? What is that compared to $1 million for other troops of a similar population size? I don't really understand that number. Outside groups have estimated that up to 15,000 transgender individuals are already serving in the military, while DOD estimates have put the figure at around half that total, but only a few hundred have contacted military officials with requests for medical treatment since last fall, when military officials announced they would allow transgender individuals to serve openly. So, transgender, that's kind of a big deal. I don't know where they're at. I don't recall ever crossing paths in the Marine Corps with any.
I've never seen it. I've never crossed paths with anybody who's a transgender, or even identified as a transgender. So I don't know.
My God.
But I just look at it this
way. Trust me, if they were around, we would know about it too.
Trust me. Oh, yes, we would.
We would, because there's not a whole lot to talk about at work. So if there's somebody showed up that was transgender, that would be around. Even the officers would know about it, okay?
Oh, my God. You got a point there, because there's certain things that stay at the enlisted level, but there's certain things you would have heard about that one.
You would have heard about that one. Thoughts. So our civilian masters will set the policy, and then everybody else will adjust. I go back to, and I said it earlier, and I'll get your thoughts on this. You have to be an interchangeable widget, as the chairman said. if you can pass the physical and you can pass the mental requirements, then you should be allowed to serve. But if you're not a widget, whether it's because of the hormone therapy you need or anything else, then you can't serve. And that goes for diabetics. That goes for, you know, people with flat feet, people with bad knees, people with bad hearing, people with bad eyesight. So if you're physically suited and capable, you know, the fact that you're transgender, come on in. It's going to be an interesting conversation when we're sitting around waiting for trucks, all right?
It is, and I don't know what the procedure is. If you decide you want to be a transgender, you're going through the procedure, how long does it take? What is the process? But if they said the military is going to do it, almost all military hospitals aren't set up for that. They're set up for, you know, basic care, basic surgery.
Yeah, I don't think you ought to be allowed while you're on active duty to do that because it simply makes you not a widget for too long a period of time.
You're not deployable. You got a certain amount of time. It's on light duty. Anything I think it's beyond 30 days. After that, they go through the medical board process.
Right.
And if you're going through this stuff, if you can't deploy, someone takes your place because you're going through transgender. It just doesn't work.
Right. Here's another email for you. Mac, I don't know that we've heard Master Guns talk about the leadership stuff in the Navy. Tampa is a pretty big Navy town. What does he hear? What does he think? Does he have friends in the Navy that have thoughts about it? So, yeah, I don't know that we've talked about that with you.
Tampa is home to MacDill Air Force Base, which is home to CENTCOM and Special Operations Command. I deal mainly with a lot of people from the Air Force and the Army, a few Marines here and there, and a few Navy here and there who are assigned to it. But everyone I've talked to so far, they're not really in favor of all this stuff. And especially when you get their special operations community, they're really at the tight-knit, tight-bond community.
Let me rephrase the question. I think what they're talking about is the collision, the Navy collision stuff, and kind of that controversy inside the Navy with their leadership, especially in particular in the surface warfare community. Any thoughts on that? Do you have
I haven't talked to anybody who's in the surface warfare community, but I know from the Army, the Navy, and it's Army, the Marines, and the Air Force. They have talked about how the budget is hurting, how there's a lot of the training has kind of not been as best as they used to be. I've talked to pilots who, a few years ago, had gotten more flight hours than they do now. So that's impacting readiness on that level. So if the pilots are saying they're not getting the flight hours they used to get, that's got to impact the surface community. They're not getting the training that they need to get to be proficient, so they're not causing these accidents out at sea. And that's a big, big problem that needs to be addressed and looked into.
All right. Another email about that. I don't know what problem you have when you can't hit a collision alarm or general quarters alarm before you get run into by another ship. I have no idea how that happened. A week ago or so, Mac played the testimony of the CNO in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee. He was asked specifically, how the hell can this happen? Don't we have radar systems? And then he was asked, how many systems? The answer to that question was a minimum of two and at times three. So three radar systems were ignored, were shut off. Nobody on the bridge saw anything in time to hit a collision alarm so that these poor son of a bitches were pinned in their racks and drowned or crushed to death?
That's a good point, because even just with the computer-age navigation, there's always a bridge watch. There's always someone, there's always the enlisted are out there doing the bridge watches on their different shifts, so no one saw anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell me these civilian ships don't have lights on. The shipboard outlaw light, they didn't see anything.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
So, it is, and this is something to look at. What is going on? What's the training like? What's their, you know, SOP on all the on these ships? Because if you notice, too, there was an admiral who was supposed to be up for the top spot was denied that because of all these collisions and all these problems out in the Pacific. I can't think of his name. It was just as
in the last 48 hours he announced that he would be resigning because he was passed over for what?
He was Pacific Commander.
He was like Fleet Commander, blah blah blah, and he was told that probably not going to be you. Here's another email. For the life of me, after listening to that Senate Armed Service Committee testimony and giving it some thought, I was stuck in traffic the other day, there honestly is no excuse. I fish off the coast of California. I have a GPS on my boat. It tells me where I am relative to land when there's another ship that's in proximity. And I set that proximity, it warns me. There's an audible alarm that goes off along with a visual alarm that goes off. That is my bullshit GPS on my dumbass boat. What the hell does a United States naval warship have on it? And with all the people in their operation center and on the bridge, let alone somebody on the outside of the ship, nobody saw anything in time so that you could sound the collision or general quarters? I find that inexcusable to think that families lost brothers, husbands, sons. To me, makes me sick to my stomach. I think the answer is going to be found in leadership and discipline, as I've heard Mac talk about before, and not in any kind of systems issue. The biggest problem I have is that the McCain was incident number 4. So obviously, the Antietam running aground in Tokyo Harbor, that was business as usual. Then the USS Lake Champlain running into a fishing vessel, that was business as usual. Then we have the USS Fitzgerald getting run into.
Correct.
And we had another incident beyond that. It's unfathomable to me that we could have so many incidents in one fleet
in such a short period of time.
I just go back to look at my boat and then I just shake my head. It's a cultural issue in my opinion. I have friends that are in the Navy. But their shit is loose. It needs to be tightened up. I think they're fortunate that the Secretary of Defense is Jim Mattis because he will get the sphincter tightening ratchet out and he will tighten their shit up without a doubt. The Navy is a service with a long, proud tradition, but they have lost their way in my opinion. It goes back to that incident in the Persian Gulf. When they flat out surrendered and they didn't even do their best to throw the computers away and do anything else, let alone fire a shot. So.
Correct.
Pretty disturbing. I guess we'll see. Enjoy the program. I think they should stand. I agree with General Kelly. 3 minutes, 3 lousy minutes isn't too much. You have the rest of the day to conduct your protest. There you have it.
There you go.
All Marine Radio. Another email. Mac, I'm curious. Is it a big deal that the guy that President Trump backed in Alabama lost? Master Guns? Big deal that the president goes down there, campaigns for Luther Strange, and he loses, and Steve Bannon goes down there and backs a more independent, more fundamentalist. He pulled a gun out at a rally, what, last week, 2 weeks ago? He says, I don't know if you saw it, but if you hear the audio, he says, I believe in the Second Amendment. And he reaches in his pocket and pulls out a pistol, and you hear people yell, and then you hear people start cheering.
The thing is with this, whenever a president backs a candidate and that candidate loses,
yeah,
it takes a little shine off the president from there. The reason why that guy won is because the other candidate was considered the establishment. And if you look at what's going on the past 9 months, healthcare reform didn't happen. We're not sure where tax reform is going. People's lives aren't getting any better. And they're like, we're tired of things not getting done. So this is kind of a rebuke against the establishment, considering I think Mitch McConnell, through his PAC, spent about $9 million on this race.
Mitch McConnell. He's not doing too good. But you had the president and the vice president down there campaigning.
Correct. But these other Republicans need to look out because they could get a primary challenger because the public is tired of nothing getting done. Obviously, we're not going to finish up on health care reform, but November 1st, everybody's going to see the rising cost of health care, the premiums and the deductible. So they want their lives to improve. They don't give a crap about who gets credit or not. They want their lives to get better. This was a rebuke against the establishment. So Republicans also need to take a look at this race and realize, get off your ass and start doing stuff.
Yeah, but the same can be applied to the Democrats. Do you think candidates are going to have to pledge to go and get stuff done and compromise? Is that what's ultimately going to have to happen? And then I'll let you go.
Candidates are always going to say, I'm going to go to take care of the people's business. They get there and they get sucked right back into the swamp. So candidates are candidates. Politicians are politicians, but the public doesn't care. They want to see stuff get done. And that's the takeaway from it. Get stuff done. Now we'll see what happens on tax reform because I think Republicans are more unified on that because that's usually their central theme, but we'll see what that happens.
Whatever.
If that fails,
whatever.
We'll see.
We'll see, right?
That's the key. We'll see.
All right. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on this morning and hanging out. We've been talking to current events on a Wednesday. Master Guns John Ubaldi, my guest, retired Marine Corps, 0311 and 0369, and currently the owner-operator of UbaldiReports.com. You can find it on the Internet. You can also find it on Facebook. And spell Ubaldi for everybody.
It's spelled UBALDI, and then reports is just common spelling.
There you go. There you have it. So, Ubaldi. It's an easy one to spell, trust me. Ubaldi with an I, because it's Italian. All right. Your favorite Italian dish is what?
Oh, I love pasta. Any kind of pasta dish.
No, your favorite. Not any kind. What is your favorite?
Rigatoni.
Rigatoni with what?
It depends. It's like a meat sauce on it, and then like get some biscotti cookies in there, and I'm good to go.
You prefer meat sauce, or do you prefer marinara with meatballs? Which is
preference? I like meat sauce with meatballs and stuff. Love my meat.
You like meat sauce and meatballs? Because some people would rather have the marinara sauce with meatballs. And then if they choose to have the meatball, they can have it. If not, they just have the marinara sauce. But you like meatball.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Wow. Throw some Parmesan cheese on that, and away I go.
What was your mom's specialty? What was Mama Ubaldi's?
She made a meat sauce. That meat sauce was – I'd sell my brother to the Cubans for the taste of that meat sauce. Love that sauce. Then she made some of the great biscotti cookies. She can cook. And she had four boys, and we love to eat.
they like to eat. All right, sir. Thank you very much for the visit.
All right. Good evening, Mac.
All right. There you have it. John Ubaldi here on a Wednesday. We, we'll continue. We'll finish up on the news when we come back. Some more news headlines. If you're just tuning in, the University of Louisville fired a very successful men's basketball coach, Rick Pitino, today. That is fallout from the from a couple of incidents. One involved, I believe, self-employed models, could be known as prostitutes, and Louisville recruits. Now, basketball shoe companies, Adidas, recruit money, assistant coaches, Rick Pitino no longer there. Pretty gross. We'll continue. More of Almering Radio coming up next on a Wednesday. Don't touch that dial.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global Soft Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the soft community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans.